Anne Tyler is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of over 20 novels, including Dinner at the Homesick Restaurant, The Accidental Tourist and Breathing Lessons. She has chronicled family life in all of its joy and pain and its propensity for buried secrets and unresolved issues. Her latest novel, Redhead by the Side of the Road, sees us following Mika Mortimer, a computer repairman whose daily routines are upended with the arrival to his home of a young man who has links to Mika's past and an old college girlfriend. I am delighted to be joined on the line from Baltimore by Anne Tyler. In some ways, Anne, Mika could be a man for our current plight, committed self-isolationist, you could argue, and his business is actually called Tech Hermit.
Yes. He, in fact, probably would not object too much to sheltering in place or self-isolating. In fact, he's practically there already.
Sheltering in place is what is the term that you're using in Baltimore?
That's what we call it when you're not supposed to, you're supposed to be at home, alone, and you can go to the grocery store and the pharmacy and the doctor, but only those places. And every place we go, we have to make sure we're at least 6 feet away from the next person. So I like to say it's the first time in my life that I found that a gesture of goodwill would be to cross the street away from someone when you see them coming.
And self-isolation, it sounds as if it's the perfect situation in some ways for a writer, but in your case that may not be so, because I believe one of the things that you like to do while writing is to leave your windows open so that you can hear life outside. You must be hearing very little at the moment.
Very little. More and more birds, fewer and fewer humans. Yes. I always said that at the beginning of this, I said, well, I practically live in quarantine anyway, but in fact, I realize how much we all need just social contact, you know.
And I guess this time brings that question up to us, just how much social contact is needed. And it's a question that in some ways we find ourselves asking with Mika, your character in Redhead by the Side of the Road. How important is social contact? How important is connection with other people?
For him, I think he thought not very important, but I think he begins to feel as he goes through the novel that it's more important than he realized. I feel very fond of Mika. In this country, we pronounce it Mika, but I've noticed everybody in England and Ireland says Mika. He's a man after my own heart, and I sympathize with him, but I think he would be exasperating to have, for instance, as a boyfriend.
Why would you think he'd be found so exasperating?
Well, he seems almost deliberately obtuse sometimes, don't you find? And even the title itself comes from a mistake he repeatedly makes, just in this case, a mistake of vision where he mistakes one sight for another. But I do find as I get older, I think about how we tend to repeat our mistakes, and certainly he does too. He's never gotten along that well with women. He falls in love, and then somehow they go off him, and he's not quite sure why.
Mika, and I will give him the pronunciation that you prefer.
Either one is fine.
This reality of his being a computer salesman, or not a salesman, repairman who goes around from house to house. What was it that attracted you to him as a character? I know your characters, you talk about them speaking directly to you. Did he speak to you? And it must have been a very short sentence, given that it's Mika.
Well, he did speak to me in an odd way. I really had no idea what I was going to write about next. I have a lot of trouble getting into a new novel. And I really did hear his voice in my head, or a voice, I shouldn't say it was his at all, a voice saying, you have to wonder what goes through the mind of a man like Mika Mortimer. And I thought, well, why? Why do you have to wonder? And the next sentence came. He lives alone, he keeps to himself, his routine is etched in stone. And so I thought, okay, well, that's a kind of person I'm familiar with and interested in. I think he's quite closely related to Macon in The Accidental Tourist, one of my earlier books. A man who is a little bit worried about having his boundaries transgressed. But I think of him also as someone who, I think that people who want to live a stiff routine and just be very careful of the rules, it's a way of trying to feel that they're in control when the world seems very chaotic around him. And I think maybe that's what's Micah's trouble.
In fact, is that what the work of a writer is in some ways? You know, you're looking at a chaotic world around you in several of the novels. It may not be absolutely chaotic, but bubbling away underneath this very nice surface is a sense of chaos in many of the families that you have written about. Is life as a writer about trying to make sense of that chaos?
I think it is for me. I don't want to speak for all writers, but well, I do think of family life as chaotic no matter what. I mean, I'm sure any of your listeners who are home right now with four little ones in their home office or something like that will agree with me.
Are you alone in that respect? I know that your husband died a few years, well, 1995. It's more than a few years back at this stage, isn't it? But you do have two daughters. Do you have grandchildren? Can you see them at this time?
Not at this time. One daughter and her husband and my two grandchildren are off in San Francisco, which very much has its own troubles. Another daughter, who, by the way, is married to a fine Donegal man, she lives up in Philadelphia.
One of the things that I saw written about the character of Micah, and of this book, in fact, it was a review. I know you're not a great fan of reviews, but this one is neither saying good nor bad. So I'd just like your opinion on it. It talked about that this book is more of a concerto, whereas your other books might be symphonies. Can you see that analogy? Because really, this is a solo affair for Michael. He's front and center with this.
I think that it's probably my shortest book because there is only Micah at the center of it, and at a certain point, it really covers only a week and a day, this book. So there's only so much to be said, and then I said to myself, well, I guess this story's over. So I tell all my friends, you could take this book to the dentist with you, and by the time you were called into the examining room, you'd have finished it. So in that sense, yes, it is just a concerto, not a symphony.
One of the things that's vitally important, yes, while Micah might be the solo instrument here, there are a couple of people who have little solos along the way if we keep the orchestral analogy running, one of whom is the character of Brink, who has links to his past. This is something that I think you really enjoy, is this idea of something back in the past that either is unresolved or that we've buried in some way. You know, did Brink present himself early on in your conversations with Micah, or how did he appear?
Well, I wasn't expecting him either. I have a certain prejudice, which you probably can tell from reading the novel, against a certain kind of slick young rich man. You know, they even tend to dress a certain way and have a certain kind of name, and they even play a certain kind of sport. And I just enjoyed poking fun at him, but you're right that I do think of how the past never really goes away and how we look at it a second time and see it differently. And so this person is very much reminding Micah of something he hasn't thought of in years and years.
And how exciting is it for you as the writer in that situation, you know, when a presenter like Brink presents himself unexpectedly, as you say, as you're sitting at the desk, I presume, one day, to begin to uncover that process of who is this guy? What's he doing here? And why is he annoying my good pal Micah, who I'm quite happy to be in his company?
Yes, there's a lot of that, yes. I do find it very exciting to be delving into a story. I start so blindly, and I don't know what's going to happen. And the characters begin to talk to me, but only belatedly. For a while, it's quite mechanical. And then as I get farther into it and they really seem to speak, I always think, oh, now I remember why I write. It makes me so happy. There's just nothing more fascinating than trying to figure somebody out and suddenly say, oh, yes, so that's what's operating there.
It's interesting the way you speak about your characters in that respect. It sounds like a real human connection. And if I bring it back to, you know, where we all find ourselves in many places in the world right now, this isolation that many of us have to follow just to avoid the coronavirus as much as anything else. How possible is it to make human connection without physical connection, do you think?
Well, I think if you'd asked me a month ago, I'd have said, perfectly possible. What's the problem? But I have noticed that if I see a neighbor going by in the street now, I rush out of my door and wave from a distance and say, hello. So I think it's probably not ideal to be that isolated. I feel as if my characters keep me company. I feel as if reading is company too, and I would imagine if your listeners are listening to this program, they're saying, yes, I'm reading right now, reading something or other to add people to my life.
But do you think of the connection you have with your characters as a type of human connection, or is it something else?
Oh, it is a type of human connection. I'm very much kept company by them, and I miss them when I send them off. I know this is not even strictly true anymore, but I feel as if I'm sending them on a train to New York, because that's where my agent is, and I'm worried about them, and I think they're not really equipped for people. Are they going to handle this all right? And so in that sense, yes, they are real. They keep me real company.
The critics have always pointed out that you seem to have a great love of writing about, I suppose, what we might call ordinary and perhaps somewhat beleaguered males. Is Micah another in that line for you?
Oh, I think so, yes. I only have so many kinds of people that interest me enough to write about. And I am aware sometimes I'll write a book and I begin by saying, this is going to be a totally different kind of book. And I get about halfway through and I look and I think, well, it's just the same thing all over again. But they're my people, so to speak.
Well, I feel rather privileged this evening as I finish up this interview as well, because until relatively recently, you very rarely gave interviews. Did something change your mind in that respect?
What changed really was the publishing world, I think. At the beginning, publishers would say, do you want to do anything for this book? And I'd say no, and they would be fine. But I think that more and more they're beginning to feel, are people reading at all anymore? There are too many competing screens and such. And so they've really started saying, are you going to pull your own weight here? And I the time has passed when I could say, well, I think the book was it. I feel as if I should be doing something, and I think particularly right now when, I don't know, we should all be kind of helping out in whatever way we can, even if it's not very relevant.
Well, do you have fears around that, whether people are reading or not?
Oh, I do think they're reading less. I'm not sure. I have no evidence. I'm not even aware of numbers, but I can see, even with my own grandchildren who are intelligent and readers and all that, that there are more things to do now than read. Whereas when I was young, that was about it, you know.
Yeah, I suppose I often, you know, we say nowadays to younger people, get your head out of that phone. I suppose when you were growing up and reading, were you ever told to get your head out of that book?
I was constantly told. My dream when I was a child was to be old. And it was totally so that I could sit in a chair and read all day and nobody would say, it's time to set the table.
Well, maybe we should think about that when we're telling our children to get their heads out of their phones. Anne, it's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to speak with you this evening. Thanks for speaking to us.
Oh, I enjoyed it. Thank you. And I hope you stay well.
That's Anne Tyler there speaking to us about her latest novel, Redhead by the Side of the Road, which is published by Chatto and Windus.